This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 17th of May 2024. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. May I first of all introduce our readers for this week. This is Heather Bryant.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recordings, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick in the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording if you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order with the most recent first. You can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on the WAS Community Radio every Saturday at 5 p.m. It's on the DAB channel, and you just search for a WAS. And you can also listen to us reading the news as a podcast via the Hampshire Chronicle website. Now, before we go on to reading the news, I need to tell you that all listeners, volunteers and friends are invited to attend our AGM on Thursday the 30th of May 2024 at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. There will be a talk afterwards by Chris Dixon, who is the CEO of Open Sight, and that will be followed by afternoon tea. If you would like to come, we'd love to see you, of course. It would be helpful if you could let us know beforehand. Just telephone the number on the key fob attached to your memory stick and let us know who you are and whether you will be coming. So, on with our usual headline stories. And the first is being read by Heather and is called Charles and William Make a Rare Joint Visit.
The King has officially handed over the role of Colonel-in-Chief of the Army Air Corps to the Prince of Wales. Charles, who became the inaugural holder of the title 32 years ago, met his eldest in a rare joint official engagement at the Army Aviation Centre at Middle Wallop on Monday to transfer the role. The King said it was a great joy to meet servicemen, their families and veterans at an earlier visit to the Army Flying Museum. He unveiled a plaque commemorating an Apache AH MK. It's an Apache AH Mark I going on display, the first of its kind to be installed at a UK museum. The aircraft was one of four involved in a rescue mission during the Battle of Jugroom Fort in 2007. King Charles said, "Let me just say what a great joy it is to be with you, even briefly, on this occasion. But also it is tinged with great sadness after 32 years of knowing you all, admiring your many activities and achievements through time that I've been lucky enough to be Colonel-in-Chief at the Army Air Corps." General Nick Barton, who took part in the rescue operation, said, "It was a unique honour to meet the King, who served as an important figurehead for the soldiers." The Army Air Corps is the Duke of Sussex, Prince Harry's old unit, in which he served as an Apache helicopter commander and co-pilot gunner during his second tour to Afghanistan in 2012. The King's decision to hand the role to William was seen as a blow to Harry when it was announced last year. The Duke had been thought the most likely candidate to take on the honour one day if he had remained a working royal. Charles, who has been undergoing treatment for cancer, spoke to one veteran who had previously had chemotherapy for testicular cancer, discussing losing the sense of taste as a result of the treatment. William was due to embark on his first engagement with the Army Air Corps later in the afternoon, receiving a briefing on its work and inspecting, training and operational aircraft, as well as talking to soldiers. He was then expected to leave the base in an Apache as part of a capability flight. The King trained with the RAF while in his second year at the University of Cambridge and was given his wings in August 1971. William served in the Army with the Blues and Royals and was an RAF research and rescue pilot for 3 years at RAF Valley in Anglesey, Wales.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, your story is headed £5.4 million boost to City Music School.
Yes, college to build unparalleled new facility. A sixth form college in Winchester has won funding from the Department for Education to build a £5.4 million state-of-the-art music school. Peter Simmons College in Owens Road has secured the funding for the new 1,205 square metre facility, which will include a recital room with capacity for 130 seats, rehearsal rooms, practice rooms and classrooms. It will strengthen further for music making. Announcing the news, Principal Sarah Russell said, "I'm thrilled to announce this exciting news on behalf of our college. Our new music school will offer the very best of facilities and take our music courses to another level by providing students with the opportunity to learn, practice and perform in an environment that is unparalleled on the South Coast. The music bolsters our existing associations with Hampshire Specialist Music Course and Steinway Pianos." Miss Russell said, "We're already a centre of excellence with an unparalleled reputation for helping students fulfil their musical ambitions and providing a springboard for some of the country's top conservatoires." Construction of the music school follows 18 months of complex discussions with sustainability, urban design and conservation consultants, among others. The building will incorporate a biodiverse roof and use renewable energy sourced from solar panels and internal heat systems. It will feature several electric vehicle charging point protection bollards. Conservationists have endorsed plans to incorporate the installation of swift nest boxes and bat boxes to encourage and protect their declining populations. Working groups, including City of Winchester Trust, were involved in the planning, and local residents were also involved in discussions on how it will maintain the open, green character of the site while moving to more renewable technologies and managing traffic flow. Ms. Russell said, "Renewing our buildings is essential, and this investment in infrastructure means that we will be able to provide high-quality, versatile learning and performance spaces, that there may be some short-term disruption during construction. We're minimising this and have a proven track record of successfully and sensitively managing projects of this nature. We'll continue to work closely with our neighbours and with Winchester City Council to operate at the highest of standards and expectations." The music school will be built on the site of Wyke Lodge, which has poor energy efficiency and carbon footprint and is being demolished. Permission for its demolition and the music school build was granted in February. Completion is scheduled for winter or summer 2024-25.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, your headline is headed "Cleared of Bid to Murder Mum."
Yes. A former mayor of Winchester has been cleared of attempting to murder his terminally ill mother after his case was thrown out. David McLean, 72, was on trial at Winchester Crown Court charged with the attempted murder of 92-year-old Margaret McLean at her home in Waltham Chase in the early hours of October 7, 2022. The trial had heard that Mr. McLean had confessed to smothering his mother in a call to the 111 service. Mr. McLean of Waltham was acquitted after the judge, Mrs. Justice McGowan, told the jury there was not enough evidence to prosecute. The judge said, having heard all the evidence in the case, and in particular the evidence of the psychiatrist, that the confessions are not reliable, I've taken the view that there's not enough evidence for your case. Because of the expert evidence, I have to take the decision from you. The judge added, I'm sorry if there is an element of frustration in this. I'm sure you would all have liked to see this through to the end. It's been a sensitive and unpleasant case. The jury was not called on May the 8th due to legal arguments between barristers Jodie Mittal, prosecuting, and Sarah Jones, KC, defending. Following this, it was decided the evidence was overwhelmingly in favour of the defence. On Wednesday, in the absence of the jury, Ms. Jones argued Mr. McLean was suffering from an acute stress reaction at the time of the confessions, making them likely to be unreliable. Making a submission of no case to answer, she said, the prosecution expert said that these confessions are, on balance, likely to be unreliable. Their own expert was unable to give any expertise. The question is whether his memories are false or accurate for things that are out of his control because of his acute stress reaction. He will not realise he is wrong. His mind has created false memories to deal with his inability to lay down accurate memories. Miss Jones had made a similar argument on the opening day of the trial, saying, we say this prosecution should not have been brought. We say the evidence any crime was in fact committed is absent, or so fundamentally flawed it should be disregarded. This prosecution, this entire case, is founded effectively entirely on the words of a grieving son undergoing an acute stress reaction in the aftermath of his beloved mother's death. Prosecutors at the trial, which started on Monday, April the 29th, had accused the 72-year-old of smothering Mrs. McLean with a cushion because he could not stand to watch her suffering. Mrs. McLean was undergoing end-of-life care, and medics thought she was about to die, jurors were told. Home Office forensic pathologist Dr. Basil Perdue told the court on May 2nd no evidence that the 92-year-old had been suffocated.
Thank you, Deborah. My headline piece is called Fury at Shambolic Beatles Tribute Gig. Furious concert goers were demanding refunds after the shambolic performance in Winchester Cathedral. On Saturday, a cast of West End singers and a live band performed in what was promised to be a jam-packed evening, consisting of more than 40 Beatles hits. The event, presented by Concerts by Candlelight, invited music lovers into the cathedral. But the evening did not live up to what was expected, with sound and visual complaints from attendees resulting in more than half of the crowd leaving before the end of the concert, with some leaving within 10 minutes of the start. The audio was described as muffled and distorted, with one concert goer describing it as a wall of sound which we couldn't distinguish through the noise. Afterwards, attendees jumped on social media to voice their frustration, with people saying they had left within 20 minutes of the start and many demanding a refund. Brian Glanville, 77, of Eastleigh, said he had been left disappointed by what promised to be a good evening. Brian, who used to work as a sound engineer, said the sound system being used was amplified through a tannoy, and it made it impossible to distinguish between any of the instruments or hear the lyrics to the songs being sung. We couldn't really hear anything. Within 10 minutes of the performance starting, people were getting up and leaving, and by the halfway point, I expect there were less than 50% of the people left. I've never seen so many people leave in a hurry, which is a shame because the musicians were clearly very talented, but the sound systems did them no justice. I don't think they did a sound check, because if they did, they would have known that what it was going to sound like. We stayed for the first half but then left, and I've never been so keen to leave anywhere. That said, the cathedral has held up his hands and apologised to everyone for how the event panned out and has been giving out refunds. I got in contact with the cathedral to voice my experience. They thanked me for my opinion and said they are doing all they can to make things right, which is commendable. Bill Walker, who also attended the event, said the cathedral was full at the start, but more than 50% of the paying audience had walked out by the start of the second half. Another one of the reviewers estimates that 80% of the audience had left before the end. Concerts by Candlelight have been contacted for a comment. Right, after that we go on to the death notices, starting with Heather, please.
Chant, Derek John Chant, 9th of May, aged 85.
Mac, Richard Jeffrey Mac, on the 13th of April, after a short illness.
Sanders, Marjorie Sanders, on the 27th of April, aged 89.
Silman, Margaret Silman, peacefully at Fleet Care Home, Dartmouth, 20th of April, aged 91.
White, Rona Mary White, knee Monday, peacefully at Dawson Lodge Care Home, West End, 19th of April, aged 96.
Yarny, Trevor Frederick Yarny, at Dunwood Care Home, on the 6th of May, aged 73.
Right, thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment read by Heather, please.
Headed, Can These Bones Live? In just 7 weeks, the first Christians witnessed the death, burial, resurrection appearances and exaltation of Jesus. It must have been a terrifying as well as an exhilarating time. Then, 50 days later, they were all met together in one place. That day, in a way that was beyond human understanding, things changed. There was a sense of the wind rushing in. Flames of fire seemed to flash around them. They were filled with a new confidence. They were somehow able to make themselves understood to people of different backgrounds, people they had felt they could never reach. Some scoffed that they were drunk, but no, it was early in the morning. If this was wine, it was a new kind of wine, a new pouring out of the Spirit. On sons and daughters, Pentecost approaches. The question is for us, do we believe we can receive new gifts of the Holy Spirit? Do we want to? What would it take? It may seem far off. Often the bones of our lives seem so dry. But the Spirit never ceases to stir us, asking, mortal, can these bones live? In Ezekiel's vision, that is the question when he's confronted with a valley full of bones. The world's answer, the worldly wise answer, is, I shouldn't think so. But Ezekiel, moved by the Spirit, answers differently. O Lord God, you know. In faith, he refuses to rate the situation at the world's estimation. And then God begins to disclose, prophesy. Prophesy to these bones and say, O dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. I will cause breath to enter into you, and you shall live. And finally they breathe for real and stand on their feet in the power of the Spirit, an exceeding great multitude. Many people in our society feel some spiritual deadness or dryness. In Ezekiel's vision there were very many in the valley, and they were very dry. But God brought life even then. And if none of this makes sense from a worldly point of view, well, that is the point of the Spirit. Jesus says, when the Spirit comes to us, he will prove the world wrong about sin, about righteousness, about judgment. Wrong about sin because the world thinks sin is a cycle which cannot be broken. But it can be broken through the forgiveness and reconciliation shown once for all on the cross. Wrong about righteousness because the world thinks it doesn't matter, but it matters more than anything, and the Spirit can help us to know what it is and find strength to do it. Judgment because the world views the possibility of judgment with terror, but all power lies with an merciful and all-gracious God, and it is our accuser, who, powerful as he may be in this fallen world, has in fact been condemned. The Spirit has proved the world wrong in its understandings of all three of these things, and perhaps he will prove the world wrong about you. Mortal, can these bones live? O Lord God, you know. This from the Reverend Philip Crinks.
Well, we go on to letters to the editor. There are 9 letters from the Hampshire Chronicle this week on a variety of subjects. The first 3 are about power politics in local government. Could you read the first letter, please?
Yes, and the first letter comes from Judith Martin, and she entitles it, A Power Problem. Your editorial following the local elections, when the ruling Liberal Democrats gained a further 3 seats, entrenching their majority, is bracing. You ask, are Lib Dems getting too successful? When 5 of us stood as independents in the 2016 City Council elections, a genuine mixed bag, not a bunch of councillors thrown out of their original parties, we had 2 main policies. An end to the cabinet system imposed by the Labour government, and an end to the annual elections that tie up the council for about 2 months each year. We wanted a return to the committee system where the best people from any party could play a worthwhile role. The Lib Dem leader Martin Todd asked me at the time why we were standing in opposition to them, as this was what his party was planning to do. And yet, since they took power in 2019, very little has changed. Many of the policies and projects begun under the Tories have continued, although it does look as though they have finally broken the Silver Hill stalemate that bogged down so many leaderships. The cabinet system continues, 7 Lib Dems deciding just about every part of the council. Quora on these bodies are extraordinarily small, as few as 2 members in some cases. That is not democracy. I welcome the fact that there are now 3 Green councillors, but they have no cabinet voting rights. I regret that Labour has had no presence on the council for so long. Labour members once had valuable roles in housing particularly. I'm not convinced that the studentification, if that's a word, of Winall and Stanmore, as you suggest, is entirely to blame, although the insulting difficulty of providing voter ID for a young person must be a factor. The last time I canvassed in Stanmore for the Lib Dems in the general election of 2019, the students seemed to have forgiven the Lib Dems for their role in the student fee debacle and seemed to be politically engaged. But a one-party state, as you say, is not healthy, whichever party it is, or wherever. Judith Martin, Rumsey Road, Winchester.
Richard, Deborah, please.
Yes, and the next letter is from E. Wright and is on a similar subject. Your editorial comment on May the 9th asks if the Hampshire Chronicle is alone in having concerns about the overwhelming majority and level of dominance of the Lib Dems on Winchester City Council, where they hold. There's good cause for concern. You go on to say that the party discipline means that most Lib Dem councillors will toe the line and that a healthy democracy requires a plurality of views. The situation in Winchester City is beginning to resemble that at its next-door neighbour, Eastleigh Borough, where the Lib Dems have dominated for years. They currently hold 35 of the 39 seats. Such dominance results in councils being run at best by an inner cabal and at worst becoming a one-man band. The remaining councillors don't add much to policy formulation and become little more than nodding donkeys. To cap it all, you mention the silly shenanigans of Lib Dems supporters dressed as dinosaurs, representing the Tories heading for extinction, apparently. It reminds me of Mark Twain's response on reading his obituary published in Error. Reports of my death are greatly exaggerated. E. Wright, Alexandra Road, Chandler's Ford, Eastleigh.
And the final of the 3 letters on the subject of power politics is written by Robert Marcus. Your editorial in the paper on May the 9th suggests that the Liberal Democrats' electoral success in Winchester local elections represents an unhealthy stranglehold on power, and raises the question of whether one can have too much of a good thing. Well, if true, surely your argument also applies to the Conservative Party, which has a near monopoly of Hampshire County Councillors and Hampshire's MPs. Written by Robert Marcus of Wanston, Sutton Scotney. Heather, please.
This letter is headed Permit Plea from Keith Hatter. On October the 1st, 2023, the operation of the visitors' parking permit scheme for those streets in controlled parking zones was taken over from Winchester City Council by Hampshire County Council. They adopted a system whose operation depends on the registration of the registration number of a visitor's vehicle via an app on the permit holder's smartphone. As I am blind and live alone, I do not possess a smartphone and could not use such an app if I did. In September 2023, when adoption of this system, I contacted Hampshire County Council to ask how I could have the same facility for my visitors to park in my street as everyone else who lives there, which is, of course, required by common sense, morality, and the law in the form of the 2010 Equality Act. Initially, HCC Highways Department referred me to My Permit, the organisation which administers the scheme, who said that my suggestion of my being given a paper permit could only be authorised by HCC. Eventually, I was reluctantly given a promise that I would be issued with a paper permit when my current one, issued by Winchester City Council on June 6, 2023, expires on June 5th. As this promise was only verbal, I was not entirely confident that it would be honoured when the time came to renew my permit. When I phoned my permit at the beginning of this month to renew the permit, which I am entitled to purchase to enable visitors to park in my street without having to register their vehicle's registration number via the app, my misgivings were justified. The Highways Department were aware of their promise of last September. Let me reiterate and end that when a visitor's car is parked in front of my house, its registration is not recorded as being parked without a permit when I have one. If it's suggested that I register the number by landline, that would not be satisfactory, as I have had to wait up to 20 minutes for the phone to be answered when calling HCC and my permit, by which time a parking warden could have recorded the vehicle as being parked without authorisation. I should like to point out that all the people, both HCC and my permit employees, to whom I spoke were extremely fully appreciated my position. Since I began this process last September, with only a few weeks to go before the deadline, it seems to be no nearer resolution. Keith Hatter, Arthur Road, Hyde.
Please.
And M. Smith writes on a similar theme and calls it a catastrophe. The new parking measures are a catastrophe. Firstly, the digitisation of the scheme has disenfranchised and discriminated against a whole swathe of people who do not have or cannot afford access to online or smartphones. This also includes budgeting for the price rises, which do not appear to go published unless you go on the app. Secondly, by not displaying permits, there's no means to gauge whether cars are parked with permission or not. Despite the reported increase in wardens, or enforcement officers as they're now called, in some areas, namely around the station, others haven't seen a glimpse of one for months. This is encouraging people to flout the restrictions in certain areas, especially those near the university or hospital. This scheme was originally introduced under the guise of bringing benefits to residents. In its present incarnation, it seems to be nobody is gaining. M. Smith, Christchurch Road, St. Cross, Winchester.
Did Deborah, please.
And now a letter from Peter Rees on a very optimistic note. Top marks. I'm sure readers and the wider public will be delighted to know that the outcome of a recent Ofsted inspection by 10 inspectors examining primary and secondary initial teacher training is the unanimous award of the highest grade possible. Outstanding. Without any recommendations for improvement to the University of Winchester and Institute of Education. Some comments bear careful attention. Highly ambitious and meticulously constructed primary programmes far exceed minimum expectations for training teachers. Trainees benefit from programmes that support them in becoming rights-respecting, research-informed teachers who think critically and embrace inclusive practices. Trainees are very well supported to understand the realities and demands of teaching. Staff are warm, respectful, and highly ambitious for their trainees. High-quality mentoring is remarkably consistent across the partnership. Mentors faithfully follow agreed approaches supported by a highly effective team of link tutors. Trainees develop a firm, well-rounded grasp of teaching reading, and training emphasises the importance of instilling a love of reading. The highly ambitious curriculum espouses the use of pertinent, up-to-date research, which prepares trainees extremely well in understanding approaches to pedagogy, safeguarding and behaviour management. This is an incredible achievement for the Institute of Education, its dedicated staff, and the strong professional partnership with schools in Hampshire, Wiltshire, Sussex, and further afield. Students learn from skilled teachers, and this unequivocal one-word judgment by Ofsted is thoroughly appropriate in these circumstances. Peter Rees, Monarch Way, Winchester.
My next letter is written by Paul Wing, and it's headed Controversy at the Cathedral. It's not about the Beatles candlelight, this is something completely different. It is in everyone's best interest to be honest and open. I refer to the controversy surrounding the sudden announcement from the Dean that Andrew Lumsden has resigned and was going with grateful thanks for all the work he's done. Chronicle, May the 2nd. At face value, this is just a very sad announcement from Dr. Lumsden, recognised as one of the top directors of cathedral music in the country. But on reflection, would such an eminent musician announce his resignation mid-term, knowing that his action would leave the cathedral with just one sub-organist? Further, would he resign without any personal comment, give up his house, his salary, the cathedral choir, and that wonderful Willis organ that has only just come back into use after a £1.1 million restoration? He will be the second organist at the cathedral to have left recently for no apparent reason. Interestingly, neither he nor his assistant, who suddenly disappeared in 2021, has made a public statement about their leaving. Could it just be that, rather than resigning of their own free will, they were put in an impossible position, had no option? There is much concern within the cathedral community that all is not as it initially appears. And the fact that no one at the cathedral will answer any questions about this sudden resignation, claiming the reasons apparently are entirely confidential and any disclosure would break the HR codes. Furthermore, there has been considerable, mainly negative, correspondence on social media. At a recent community meeting at the cathedral, the dean and members of the chapter, with one noticeable absence, refused to confirm or deny that these negative comments were nothing more than unfounded rubbish. With no clarification or explanation of why these resignations took place, I can only assume that the two organists concerned were given no option other than to resign with some financial settlement or a gagging order, or a gagging order. It is a shame that the cathedral authorities will not deny this hypothesis. And that was written by Paul Wing of Mortimer Close, Headbourne, Worthy.
This letter is headed Help for Jurors from Stephen Hanvey. Winchester Crown Court's selection as one of the 15 pilots for arranging counselling support to deeply distressed jurors is indeed good news. Jurors are made up of ordinary, thoughtful local people and are the jewel in the crown of our criminal justice system, according to Lord Justice Auld, 1999. But such service can come at a painful personal cost when detailed accounts and the evidence of murder, violent assaults and child sexual abuse are played out over days or weeks of a harrowing trial. Unlike in some other countries, jurors here receive no preparation or follow-up once the trial is over. As I'm aware from my own past work at Winchester Crown Court and my current doctorate study of the jury experience with Southampton Law School, this can leave some individuals traumatised, but reluctant to seek help after repeated directions not to discuss the trial. The 6 free counselling sessions and the helpline to be set up are hopeful signs that this jewel is at last getting the attention it deserves. Stephen Hanby, Godwin Close, Week.
Thank you. Here's the Richard, please.
Andrew Beadle makes a plea for common sense. Eileen Berry, in her letter, Chronicle May 9th, talks a lot of common sense about the proposed hospital reorganisation. She's always listened to and spoken up for ordinary people, which is why she was regularly re-elected as a Conservative city councillor. She may well be right that the decision has already been taken to proceed with the proposals, despite 21,000 people signing a petition to either retain the existing A&E unit at RHCH or build a new hospital in Winchester. The local election results in Winchester were clearly bad for the Conservatives. However, I do not believe they were an unqualified endorsement of the council's performance. In addition to the unpopularity of the government, I think a contributory factor could have been the proposal to downgrade the A&E unit, which is supported by Flick Drummond. Whilst no fault of the Conservative candidates, I cannot help wondering how much this issue affected how some people voted. We've been told that a new hospital at Dummer would be only 10 minutes away up the M3. I recently timed it from the RHCH to the Dummer turning. The journey took 20 minutes, so it would have been even longer to the hospital itself, even for those living in Winchester. What a pity Flick Drummond didn't follow the example of Eileen Berry and listen to the views of residents rather than those of a few hospital consultants. Andrew Beadle, Milestone Place, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. That's the end of our letters for this week. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to editorial comment, read by Deborah, please.
Preparing for future reveals signs of past. We report this week on the surprise uncovering of an almost forgotten part of Winchester's history, out of sight for decades. Workers from MCS Construction have been preparing the former Debenhams building for conversion into restaurants. Working on the front, they uncovered the earlier signage from Sheriff and Ward, the large draper's shop that preceded Debenhams in the High Street and operated for around 100 years. The signage varies from carved wood with gold leaf paint from Victorian times to glass from the early years of the 20th century. It's a fantastic discovery of a business that was at the heart of the city in an era before chain stores, owned by remote corporations. The whole High Street would have been filled by locally owned businesses, offering just about every product and services that anyone would need. Mark Townsend, site manager for MCS Construction, gave the Hampshire Chronicle a guided tour and spoke with enthusiasm about the discovery. He says the signs are to be retained in situ and covered over, not removed and sold, or worse still, thrown into a skip. This is a big relief. They're a splendid piece of Winchester's social history, and an example that important pieces of the past need not necessarily be huge old buildings made of stone. It's not open to the public, but you can see the signs through the protective netting from the High Street. When the new businesses, Nando's and Five Guys, open, the signs will again be covered over. But the important thing is that they will still be there, waiting perhaps another 100 years. Hopefully whoever uncovers them in the future will treat them with the same care and respect.
Thank you, Deborah. Now, the next item is the opinion piece written this week by Joanna Lewis. Last week, one of the big arguments of our age, capable of producing conflict that has the potential to destroy a relationship or seriously disrupt family life, was suddenly nowhere to be seen. To series binge or not to series binge, whether it is nobler to watch one episode at a time or all at once. Well, it was about the unveiling of Clarkson's Farm, Series 3. After 5 minutes, we knew we had to watch as many as we could, as soon as we could. Hilarious, dramatic, upsetting, thought-provoking, and back to hilarious again. I cannot remember the last time I laughed so much. I even lost my voice. Clarkson is much funnier down on the farm than in Top Gear or The Grand Tour, although I doubt many of the locals in the nearby village still find him even remotely amusing. His uber-popular TV series chronicles his adventures as the owner of a sizeable farm in the Cotswolds, nestling in an area of outstanding natural beauty. Hundreds of visitors now regularly visit Diddley Squat, with its farm shop, a burger van, and a small chance of bumping into some of the show's stars. Traffic levels have soared. In this series, however, we are firmly on Clarkson's side as he comes to terms with what seems like extremely unfair local council restrictions on what he can do. Alongside these, our hero faces daily battles with the cow juice police, or the health and safety police, the mountainous red tape and regulations controlling a farmer's every move, the buffoonery, the incompetence, the gap between grandiose ideas and reality are comedy gold, which we all need a dose of. Instead of a great, big, growling, old, silverback, aggressive alpha male, we have a Clarkson who is ignored, laughed at, or accidentally kicked in the groin. A Clarkson left totally befuddled and looking every one of his 65 years. His pair of red Labradors routinely appear. They take no notice whatsoever of his commands. If there's a low branch, Clarkson will walk into it. A ditch, and he will get stuck in it. Another running joke is his stubborn belief that technology and vast sums of money offer solutions. But the more expensive the kit, the bigger the disaster. For example, his high-tech strap-on nettle picker that lasted 5 minutes. Yes, they exist, but he never gives up. His British ingenuity has no limits. Who else would try to speed harvest blackberries using a Hoover? It's the local characters who often steal the show. Whether it's baby-faced Caleb, now promoted to farm manager, who thinks someone born in Oxford is foreign, or Alan the Builder, or King of the Mullet Gerald, their exasperated interactions and mutual attempts to understand each other are priceless. Their growing bonds of affection, especially after shocking news about Gerald, add to the heartwarming scenes, completing the transformation of Clarkson from grumpy git into old fart with a heart. Hilarity aside, there's also a serious reason to watch this. It is one of the only TV programmes to show farmers and people who have proper rural jobs true to the salt of the earth types they usually are and true to the awful pressures they endure. BBC shows like Countryfile regularly misrepresent or patronise them. Made by urban elites for urban elites, as has been said recently, they rarely are on their side. Worryingly today, many in the countryside feel they have no political party whatsoever to represent them. The Tories have allowed the importation of cheap overseas animal products, often reared below RSPCA standards, and told UK farmers to stop growing food. But a Labour government will probably allow the countryside to be concreted over and prevent anything being grown at all. The final reason to watch it, you will have a new understanding of mushrooms and a new name for them, which could change your life. Yes, I don't quite understand that last statement, but I'm sure she does. She knows what she's talking about. Right, well, we go on to Belgarum. It's an alternative look at the news. Two items this week. Heather, to start, please.
this letter is about Tony's trip. He's 90 years old. Excuse me. A Winchester care home resident was given his perfect day out when he went to see his favourite football team play in London. Brentford Football Club fan Tony Day, 90, was taken by a staff at Brendan Care St Giles View to see the team play its London Derby match on May the 4th against Fulham at the GTEC Community Stadium. Accompanied by his daughter Susanna and care assistant Stuart Weatherall, Tony was given the VIP treatment, the club featuring him in the match day programme. While the match was a goalless draw, Tony had a great time, saying, "It was overwhelming in a good way. I'm really grateful to Stuart, who worked very hard to make my visit such a pleasurable one. He was very helpful and supportive. I have not seen my daughter look so happy for ages, sharing this day with me." Tony used to live in southwest London. He, his dad and granddad were all fans of Brentford. He first saw them play in the 1946-47 season, when he recalls they beat Wolverhampton Wanderers 4-1. At Christmas, he received a signed shirt from the club as a present. His match visit is part of Brendan Care's Perfect Day project, which aims to enable residents to enjoy days out. Another St Giles View resident, Norma Watts, was also treated, spending a day being pampered at a spa in Berkshire. These days are being made possible through funding from the Maclay Dementia Fund.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Well, this is exciting. City's top-rated pubs. Winchester is well known for its pubs in and around the city. It's even home to the alleged oldest pub in England, the Royal Oak. But which pubs are rated as best from visit by visitors? According to TripAdvisor, the best five rated pubs and bars in Winchester are 5. The King Alfred, Saxon Road, Hyde. The King Alfred is one of Winchester's more classic pubs. This may not be the best place for a quick pint, but it's a location for a more refined and relaxed evening. You'll be welcomed with plush armchairs and a crackling fireplace in a dimly lit room that really gives a nonchalant atmosphere. Behind the bar, there are options of real ales, cocktails, a large wine list, as well as a variety of beers, spirits and soft drinks. The food is cooked from scratch, and the menu is filled with options to suit anybody's taste. Number 4, the County Arms, Rumsey Road. The County Arms is the first Green King pub on our list, and it's a pub with a much different vibe from King Alfred. With the pub being so near to the university, hospital and prison, clientele varies, but there are weekly events that would suit anyone. It offers quiz nights every Monday, poker nights every Tuesday, and karaoke every Sunday. And inside there are many TVs showing lots of different sports. The pub has lots of indoor and outdoor seating, as well as a pool table and a darts board to keep customers entertained. Number 3, the Crown and Anchor, the Broadway. The Crown and Anchor is the only pub on our list located on the High Street, and it's a pub that focuses on welcoming all kinds of people from various backgrounds. The Crown and Anchor caters for events, parties, birthdays, where it can provide buffets, barbecues, and of course the regular menu, which features gluten-free and vegan options, ensuring anyone can experience the food they offer. Like most pubs, the Crown and Anchor has a large bar with different ales, lagers, ciders and wines to quench the thirst of any customer. The pub also has the secret garden for customers to enjoy a drink in the sun this summer. Number two is the Black Boy, Wharf Hill. Self-described as a backstreet boozer, the Black Boy features as one of the more unique pubs on our list. The Black Boy focuses on classic pub traditions, therefore you won't find a table reservation or food menu here, but you will find an incredible interior design with a vintage feel and eye-catching features everywhere you look. The Black Boy has five locally brewed real ales and a selection of wines on offer. You can enjoy your drinks inside, where several armchairs, sofas and regular seating are available, or you can go to the pub garden, which includes benches, overhead covering and heaters. And at number one, the Golden Lion, Alsford Road, St Giles Hill. Top of the list is the Golden Lion in Alsford Road, and this is TripAdvisor's recommendation for the best pub in Winchester. The Golden Lion has a beautiful outside and a cosy indoor feel. It's slightly outside the city centre, so it's perfect for a relaxed experience. The Golden Lion offers delicious food and great service, according to TripAdvisor, and who could forget the large drinks menu full of alcoholic and soft drinks? All rankings were correct as of May the 9th.
Thank you, Richard. I wish you could have seen Richard's face as he was reading that. It's a real picture. It really entertains us. I'm sorry you can't see it. Right, well, we go on to what's on lots of items regarding events in our area, which you might find of interest, starting with Deborah, please.
Royal British Legion branch to host a D-Day Memorial Evening. This will be taking place in Winchester next month. The event will be at the Worthies Sport and Social Club at Loder Close, Kingsworthy, on Tuesday, June the 4th at 7 p.m. The evening, hosted by the Worthies branch of the Royal British Legion, hopes to host up to 150 guests. The evening will include a D-Day quiz, a World War II veteran-led question and answer session, and a World War II reenactment players in full uniform. The Normandy invasion took place during World War II, launched in June 1944, now 80 years ago. In addition to UK soldiers, D-Day forces included sailors, soldiers and airmen from the USA, Canada, Australia, France and others. Donations will be collected for the Royal British Legion on the night, and the event is free to attend.
Thank you, Deborah. I've got a piece which is headed Classic Cars Rally Round for Hospitals. A Hampshire charity is hosting a classic car rally this May to raise funds for Hampshire hospitals. Hampshire Medical Fund raises funds to buy cutting-edge medical equipment outside of the NHS budgets for hospitals in Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover. The charity was founded by the Earl of Carnarvon in 1981 and held its first classic car rally in 2017. With the burden of funding on the NHS ever increasing, the Hampshire Medical Fund says that its work is increasingly necessary to help enable Hampshire hospitals to provide the best possible care for patients at its sites. The 2023 car rally was held at Highclere Castle, and it funded fibre optic endoscopic evaluation of swallowing, FEES, equipment for the speech and language therapy department at Basingstoke. Well, now the charity is looking to fund a further £26,700 for a second FEES to aid the stroke department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester. The equipment will be given to the speech and language department at the RHCH, enabling therapists to assess swallowing difficulties in patients such as those who suffered from a stroke. The classic car rally, we get to the final bit right at the end. The classic car rally is on Sunday, May the 19th at Mulshanger House, starting at 8:45 a.m. Heather, please.
Folk fun at Mayfest. The streets of Winchester will be resounding with the sounds of folk music for an upcoming festival. On Saturday, May the 18th, Mayfest, the city's traditional folk event, will see 30 Morris, Clog and Appalachian sides around the city centre. Performances will take place in St Morris Covert, outside the Cathedral, the Buttercross and the Great Hall. The public are invited to take part in dance workshops by Folk Active, and a community dance at the Cathedral is being planned at 2 p.m. to be hosted by Winchester Morris Men. Furthermore, a varied programme of folk music from the area will be showcased in St Lawrence Church from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. All events are free of charge except for entry to the Great Hall. For more details, interested parties can visit www.winchester-mayfest.org.uk.
Thank you, Heather. Richard.
Badgers are on parade.
Ah.
Apparently. Comedy legend Harry Hill is set to embark on a new live tour in 2025, including a performance at Winchester's Theatre Royal on April the 22nd. The tour, Harry Hill, New Bits and Greatest Hits, will celebrate his almost 30-year career in his 60th year. Tickets will go on sale on May the 10th and can be bought from his official website. Dubbed the Badger Parade, Hill's show promises a mirthful exploration into pressing issues such as the Scart Leeds decline, the culture wars, and comparing crab sticks and rhubarb alongside the origins of tiramisu. Audience can anticipate exuberant entertainment as Hill revisits his old favourites like interspecies tennis, the time I went up in the space shuttle, and when Nan got her hair caught in the knitting, using his unique old bit randomizer. Harry Hill said, I'm looking forward to celebrating my Diamond Jubilee, 60 years of fun, by going round the country and thanking all the people that have supported me over the years. I've had a word with the Badgers and they've agreed that for one last time, the parade's on.
Richard, Deborah.
A wide range of events on the menu for a week-long feature. A celebration of Winchester's culinary abilities returns this summer with the Winchester Food Festival in July. For 2024, a new feature called A Taste of Winchester will see a wide array of events on the menu in a week-long programme from Monday, July the 8th to Saturday, July the 13th, ahead of the big day on Sunday, July the 14th. Hampshire Fair is working with Winchester City Council to encourage local food and drink producers, makers and hospitality businesses across the district to hold their own events and activities, from tastings and foodie masterclasses to special offers and themed menus. Now in its second year, Winchester Food Festival has more than 30 producers taking part in the event. One of these is Open House Deli, an independently female-owned and sustainably led kitchen, cafe and eco-shop in Winchester, which makes everything from scratch in its kitchens. The business is based on a belief in consuming consciously by celebrating seasonal ingredients. At the festival, the deli will have artisan fresh bread and unique small batch food and drink brands for people to sample and buy. They'll also be selling great products to take out, helping people to lessen their impact on the planet. Another business taking part is Beaky Blinders, a gluten, wheat, dairy and soya-free kitchen, which has a passion and drive to create delicious, sweet and savoury foods for everyone to enjoy. Whether it's an allergy, intolerance or lifestyle choice, it believes no one should have to go without. The firm will be found at the festival with a variety of brownies, blondies, rocky roads, sausage rolls, slices and pastry turnovers. It will also have a large section of vegan products. Also appearing will be Mum and Dad's Kitchen, which began in a home kitchen as a hobby and has grown into a successful business for Jane and Dave Endine, who produce gluten-free pies, quiches, cakes and pastries, both wholesale and online. June said, "We like to say that our products are unbelievably gluten-free, as you can't tell the difference, and we've tricked many a judge at the British Pie Awards." The Winchester Cathedral Refectory will also be serving up a selection of hot and cold food and drinks. For more information, including updates about A Taste of Winchester events and producers taking part in the food festival, visit winchesterfoodfestival.co.uk and get the latest news via @WinchesterFoodFestival on Instagram and Facebook.
Thank you, Deborah. And finally, a quick canter through what's on stage and screen in the local area the next few weeks. Wednesday the 22nd of May, Adam Hawley, who's a guitarist and producer, Adam Hawley, a guitarist and producer, he has burst on the contemporary jazz scene as a celebrated and innovative artist, composer and band leader. That is at the Concord Club. It's Wednesday the 22nd. Thursday the 23rd, this is a talk by Jane Robinson. Remarkable story about Barbara Lee Smith Bodicon, an unknown Victorian woman who changed the world. And that is at the Arc, Winchester in Jewellery Street. Friday the 24th, it's the Trinity's Big Sleep Out. If you fancy sleeping out in the open air, please join them. Tuesday the 28th, Fiona Bevan and Adam Beattie. They're an acclaimed Scottish singer-songwriter and platinum singer-songwriter combo. They embark on a double headline tour of the UK, and they are starting at the Hyde Tavern in Hyde Street, Winchester. Friday the 31st, Songs of Mourning. That is MOURNING. Songs of Faith and Joy. One of the finest English tenors of his generation teams up with the Winchester Guitar Festival director Mark Eden to sing Renaissance lute songs. That is at St Paul's Church in Winchester. Monday the 3rd of June at the Theatre Royal, there's a National Theatre live showing of their play Nye, which Michael Sheen plays Nye Bevan in a surreal and spectacular journey through the life and legacy of the man who transformed Britain's welfare state and created the NHS. And finally, Friday the 7th of June, Macmillan Cancer Support have got a charity gala, a three-course meal, music and raffle and games, and that is at Romsey Rugby Club. Now, before we go on to items of general news, have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 5:15 a.m. and set again at around 10 to 9. Well, now we go on to items of general news, starting with Heather, please.
This item is headed Classics Has Never Been Cooler. Classics, the study of the Greeks and Romans, their languages, literatures, history and cultures, is clearly studied much less than in centuries past. It dominated school and university syllabuses right up until the first half of the 20th century. Mr. Lewis, head of classics at Winchester College, believes most of its decline can be put down to space needing to be made for other subjects and the absence of classic teachers in the great majority of schools. However, classics has never been cooler in popular culture. There has been a steady rebound in the subject for some time now. Mr. Lewis encourages would-be classicists and has set up a number of projects aimed at the wider community. The Winchester Greek Club, a fun collaboration with the U3A, where our six formers teach U3A members Latin and GCSE, Latin GCSE, and hosting trainee teachers on PGCE courses for enrichment days, as well as promoting the wonderful classic summer schools, which are brilliant opportunities for those interested in the ancient world. In fact, he regularly teaches at the JACT Greek Summer School, hosted each summer at Bryanston School in Dorset. He came up with the idea of the club in 2022, growing out of the collaboration the college had been doing with three schools in and around Winchester, which offered Latin at GCSE, King's, Perrins, and Westgate. Their Latin teachers had been bringing pupils for afternoons of classics enrichment based around the historical collections at Winchester College. It was obvious to Mr. Lewis that there was a lot of interest among the pupils in the classical world, and ever keen to spread the good news of Greek, he thought two or three might want to try it. In fact, he got 25 or so, of whom 18 completed the first year, receiving the Intermediate Certificate of Classical Greek, and 14 are about to finish the second, sitting the GCSE. Meanwhile, another cohort of 18 is following behind. Meeting for an hour after school on a weekday during term time, their primary focus is learning the Greek language. However, they also spend time learning about Greek civilization with set texts and two civilization topics as part of the GCSE course. The pace is fast and the pupils have to do roughly an hour's homework a week, but they have all proved highly motivated. Mr. Lewis says it's always a huge pleasure to introduce something you're passionate about to pupils who are keen to learn. However, one aspect I particularly enjoy is the fact that pupils come from a range of schools, and this is an opportunity for them to meet new and like-minded people. Above all, Greek Club gives them an insight into the world and the magnificent cultural and intellectual achievement of the ancient Greeks. The first year of the club is designed for Year 11s, partly so the GCSE will fall at the end of Year 12, so will not be competing with public exams. However, exceptions can be made to this rule. An information letter with details of how to sign up is circulated to parents of Year 10 pupils in schools and around Winchester in June, and the first session is mid-September. Parents of interested pupils are welcome to contact Mr. Lewis before then at easl@wincol.ac.uk.
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
Data lays bare the impact of soaring home costs. New figures reveal how private renters and homeowners in Winchester were affected by inflation and increased interest rates last year. Analysis by the Office for National Statistics shows 11% of private renters in Winchester were affected by rising rent. Of those affected, the average monthly renting increased from £1,196, that's a month, right? Mm. Before 2023, to £1,305 last year. The figures show the increased cost accounted for 37% of these renters' household disposable income. Housing costs have increased since 2022 amid rising inflation and higher interest rates. In the year to October 2022, inflation reached a 40-year high. In response, the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee gradually raised the bank rate from 0.1% to 5.25% between winter 2021 and summer 2023. By the end of 2023, more than a third of those responsible for rent or mortgage payments in Great Britain were struggling to afford them, according to the ONS Opinions and Lifestyle Survey. The analysis shows 15% of homeowners in Winchester were remortgaging in 2023, with the average monthly repayments going up by £325 from £1,504 to £1,828 in 2023. Overall, the increased cost took up 52% of household disposable income. Step Change, a charity and debt advice service, said rising housing costs had been a major driver of the cost of living crisis. Head of communication at Step Change, Simon Trevithick, said repeated interest rate rises have pushed mortgage payments up for hundreds of thousands of people, and rent has risen to record levels both inside and outside of major cities as private renters especially feel the pinch. We want to see the government supporting households facing increased costs. We've long called for an end to Section 21 no-fault evictions, as well as a tenancy support scheme ahead of evictions as a last resort. He said the mortgage charter, brought in by the government last year to help people with sudden increases in mortgage costs, is coming to an end in July. Simon said the government should reassess removing help from mortgage borrowers to ensure there isn't a cliff edge for those coming off their fixed-term deals later in the year. The ONS assigned each area an exposure score relative to other local authorities based on the proportion of households affected by rising costs and how much the increased costs took from household disposable income. Rent in Winchester was scored a 5 out of 7, meaning it was at medium exposure to rising costs. Mortgages in the area had high exposure, scoring a 6.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Campaign to fight plans for airfield. A campaign has been launched to fight development plans for a Hampshire airfield. The land at Popham Airfield has been earmarked for 3,000 houses in the latest draft of Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council's local plan. The plans, known as Popham Garden Village, have received opposition from Winchester City Council and the Deva Society, which for 30 years has been fighting the proposal for a new town at Mitchell Deva Station. Popham Airfield Matters is gaining members to try and preserve the airfield. John Chaplin from the group said the airfield is one of the most popular grassroots airfield in the country and offers people from all walks of life a chance to participate in aviation activities. It's also a site that hosts numerous outdoor events, including air shows, car shows, charity events and caravanning. Finally, it sits on the rolling chalk of Coxford Down, and a large development will inevitably impact the already threatened Test Itchen catchment. In our view, it is truly a community asset worth preserving. We're not a protest group as such and wish to work within the planning system to register our views. Having said all of that, we got a lot of very positive interest and people joining the Popham Airfield Matters group. Even people who don't have an interest in aviation but have been coming to Popham for years from afar were very supportive. Over the bank holiday weekend, the airfield hosted the Microlite Aircraft Trade Show. Speaking to the YouTube channel Flyer at the event, group member Brian Lloyd said, "We believe that there are more appropriate sites, and we're doing what we can to make sure that the locals, the residents, and all the people that use Popham as a community hub have their say when it comes to public examination. We understand that the outcome should be at the end of the year or the beginning of next year, and if at that point they decide to keep Popham in the plan, then it will go to public examination. At that point, we need to have a body of people that can be invited to that discussion to put our side of the argument. I expect nothing will happen in the next 5 years because everything always takes an awful long time." The group is charging £1 for lifelong membership. And for more information, you can visit Popham Airfield Matters, all stuck together, .org.
My piece is headed Objections Made to College House Plan. Almost 20 people are objecting to plans for a new house in an area of surplus land at a Winchester college. The application is for a 4-bedroom house at Peter Simmons College in Berwick Way. The plans, which don't name an applicant, has received 18 public objections by Sunday, May the 12th. This comes 2 years after a scheme on the same location for 3 houses was refused by Winchester City Council and dismissed on appeal. Berwick Way residents are opposing the scheme. Ian Child said, although the proposal states that the land is surplus to requirements of Peter Simmons College, the planning application notes that there has previously been an approved proposal for the land to be used for sports purposes, and this opportunity would be lost under this latest proposal. I understand that one suggestion that you have received for mitigating the impact of this proposed application would be to move the garage to the northern boundary of the plot and to make retaining the trees and hedgerows a condition of any approval rather than simply a proposal. Ian Trinder is concerned about the potential loss of privacy. He added, loss of open space, sports or recreation facility, the land on which the new dwelling is proposed has previously had consent for cricket nets, which has not been implemented, but which could be resurrected in the future for the benefit of the local community and college students. Louise Williams is worried that it could be a Trojan horse. We are concerned that this one dwelling development is being used as a first step to implementing the fuller plan which was originally submitted for this site, which had very adverse impacts on the existing houses in Berwick Way. We would like clarification that this is not the case, she said. The City of Winchester Trust also objected. There is no assessment of evidence that clearly shows this land is surplus to requirements. Indeed, there has never been any explanation as to why the 2013 permission for the installation of cricket nets did not go ahead. In the decade since 2013, Peter Simmons College has continued to grow, and we have seen various applications that have sought to squeeze more facilities into this finite site. The planning statement said that the parcel of land does not form part of the sports pitch and is surplus to the college's requirements. Heather, please.
This item is about repairs for 600 miles of roads. Nearly 600 miles of Hampshire roads will be given a new lease of life this summer.
Oh, God.
Hampshire County Council annual programme of road surface strengthening includes 400 locations. Sites are selected for surface dressing based on an assessment of the road's condition, including a level of potholes, cracking, and other defects. Surface dressing involves the application of fresh stone onto a layer of bitumen binder. The loose stones are then embedded by rubber rollers, with remaining loose chippings then swept up. Surface dressing cannot happen if the road is wet, as the moisture will prevent the bond between the chippings and asphalt. Councillor Nick Adams-King, executive lead member for Universal Services, said, "We know that potholes and other road defects are a cause of frustration to residents and motorists, which is why we invest in a range of ways to make Hampshire's roads stronger. Surface dressing treatments help to slow the natural deterioration of roads and reduce the occurrence of potholes and other road defects, as well as giving the road more grip to boost safety. It's a cost-efficient way to target roads that carry the most traffic, so are most at risk of wear and tear, helping taxpayers' money to go further at a time when our budget is extremely stretched. These treatments are applied during the summer months because the process needs warm, dry weather to be successful. Where surface dressing is being carried out, road closures will usually be in place from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. with a few exceptions."
Please.
Schools concern. More than two-thirds of children in need in Hampshire fail to meet the expected standard in writing, reading and maths last year, according to new figures. Across England, looked after children, pupils in care and those with a child protection order performed worse compared to all pupils in the 2022-23 academic year. The School Leaders Union, the National Association of Head Teachers, said the disadvantage gap will continue to harm vulnerable children's life chances unless the government invests in services supporting schools. Department for Education figures show 137 of 457 children indeed in Key Stage 2 in Hampshire met the required standard for reading, writing and maths in 22-23, the equivalent of 30%. The figures for all pupils include the number of children considered in need as well. General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders said, "Children in social care have often gone through hell, and unfortunately this trauma can understandably impact on their educational progress as well as their social and emotional well-being. Schools work hard to support them in all respects, but they're having to do so without enough funding, staff or specialist support. The figures show 48% of Key Stage 2 children in need in Hampshire reached the expected standard for reading, 41% for writing and 42% for maths. For all pupils, 73% met the standard in maths, writing and writing, while 75% did in reading."
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Butcher celebrates after opening new premises. A butcher has been celebrating after opening new premises in Kingsworthy. Hoggett and Boar is owned and run by Sean Thurgood, a former chef who set up the business in 2019. Sean had started doing bits and pieces of butchery for friends privately, a trade which grew significant during the COVID pandemic, before expanding and growing rapidly since. The butcher had previously been in Broughton, but moved to new premises in London Road, Kingsworthy this year. The unit next door to Kingsworthy Garage had previously been occupied by the Little Kitchen Company. Hoggett and Boar is a member of Hampshire Fair, an organisation championing local produce to consumers and trade businesses. Hampshire Fair aims to inspire residents to discover the produce available closer to home and establish Hampshire as a top food destination. Hoggett and Boar works with local suppliers where possible and respects the animals it butchers, with the aim of making the entire business process as sustainable and environmentally friendly as possible. The butcher had a soft launch before officially opening on Saturday, April the 20th. It offers an extensive range of local food and produce, including meats, vegetables, cheeses, sweet treats, coffee and more. Mr. Thurgood said, "Come on down and say hello. We want to see as many new faces as possible and show you what we're doing here and who else we're working with at Hampshire Fair. We're open Tuesday through to Saturday every week, and we're looking forward to seeing you and serving you some delicious food and drink." Hampshire Fair commercial manager Natasha Doshniak said Hoggett and Boar have been a member of Hampshire Fair for more than 5 years. Hampshire Fair has 350 members working in food, drink and craft, and our whole mission is to championing local and about championing local and encouraging the public to think about supporting local first. We know running a business can be tough, so to see one of our members opening a new shop and working with other Hampshire Fair members is fantastic. We're thrilled for Sean and are looking forward to supporting him and seeing his journey going forward.
Thank you, Deborah. Right, my piece is headed Birthday Wish Comes True for Classic Car Fan. A birthday wish came true for classic car enthusiast Ed Taylor when his Winchester Dementia Care Home arranged a special trip for him on a convoy of classic MGs. The 78-year-old told staff at Colton Cares St Catherine's View that he had previously owned an MG and recalled organised a similar outing for his late father when he reached the age of 90. After speaking with Ed's wife Andrea, companionship team leader Laura Sheldrake passed on the couple's request for another celebratory trip to the Winchester MG Owners Club. Steve Farrell, club secretary, mobilised fellow members to arrive at the Stanmore Lane home ready to take Ed out. The former electrical engineer and software company boss was greeted with the sight of 7 classic cars. After the excursion in and around Winchester, a delighted and grateful Ed said, "It was really good going for a drive. Thank you for my birthday present. Heather, please.
Schoolgirls take the plunge to fight cancer. A last-minute sign-up to Swimathon 2024 saw two Chandler's Ford schoolgirls make a splash at their local pool by raising more than £2,000 for Cancer Research UK and Marie Curie. Eva Deacon and Phoebe Marsden, both 11, decided to complete the 5K challenge in memory of Eva's dad, Lee, who died from soft tissue sarcoma just a month earlier. Both girls received a swimathon medal, towel and gold top fundraiser swimming cap after they each completed 100 lengths of the pool at Places Leisure, Eastleigh, on Sunday, April 28th, in aid of the two charities. Eva's mum, Caroline, said, "One minute they were at their swimming lesson and the next they'd signed up to do 1.5K and then became 5K. I couldn't believe how they just continued to swim non-stop for such a long period of time, managing to complete it in 1 hour and 21 minutes. They really earned their sponsor money and are keen to do the triple 5K challenge next year. I am so incredibly proud of both girls, and just like her dad, Eva showed such quiet courage and determination to set an example to all. He always put others before himself, and that's exactly what she's done here. I know Lee would have been so proud." Sonia Marsden, Phoebe's mum, said both girls were desperate to raise awareness and funds for these two fantastic charities to help support others diagnosed with this dreadful disease. "We are so unbelievably proud of them for pushing themselves to complete such an amazing achievement, and we're grateful for all the support and kind donations." So far, the girls have raised £2,071, and people can still sponsor Eva and Phoebe by heading to their fundraising page at justgiving.com/fundraising/Eva Deacon. Since it began in 1986, the event has raised more than £55 million for charity. Eliza Mitchell, Cancer Research UK spokesperson for Hampshire, said, "We are incredibly grateful to both Eva and Phoebe for diving into this challenge at such short notice. And we commend their courage for taking part in Lee's memory so soon after his passing. It's thanks to the commitment and generosity of supporters like Eva, Phoebe and their families that we are able to fund research into the vital treatments of tomorrow. From pioneering some of the first chemotherapies to the development of advanced targeted treatments in immunotherapy, our research has played a role in around half of the world's essential cancer drugs. That's why we're grateful to all our swimmers who continue to raise money to help us keep making new discoveries and breakthroughs." Jane Waterhouse, head of fundraising at Marie Curie, said, "Money raised through your sponsored swims help our nurses to continue to deliver care and support and funds for our free information and support services."
Thank you, Heather. Richard, please.
I think this is a timely warning.
Oh.
Police use new cameras.
Oh.
Hampshire Police have confirmed it's using new long-range speed cameras that can catch drivers speeding as far as 1 kilometre away. These cameras have made it almost impossible for drivers to dispute a speeding fine, as they can also capture images and videos. The force has confirmed that its roads policing unit is now using the cameras. The long-distance cameras can also see if drivers using their mobile phones while at the wheel or not wearing seat belts. The cameras can even detect middle lane hoggers and those who are tailgating the driver in front. The RAC road safety spokesperson Pete Williams said, "Although this new long-range camera could be used to enforce illegal mobile phone use or tailgating, its primary use will no doubt be to catch speeding drivers if indeed it becomes more widely used by forces." After having a successful trial with Gloucester Police in 2018, many police forces, including Hampshire Constabulary, are now using these cameras. Some drivers will inevitably end up being very surprised when a notice of intended prosecution arrives on their doormat when they felt they'd managed to slow down enough after spotting a police car in the distance, said Mr. Williams. Typically, the minimum penalty for speeding is a £100 fine and 3 points on your licence. Drivers who have not been caught speeding before and don't have points on their licence could be offered a speed awareness course instead of penalty points.
Thank you, Richard. Deborah, please.
Octogenarian 70K Cycling Challenge. Hampshire octogenarian Brian Ridsdale is pedalling towards 70 kilometres for Christian Aid Week in 2024. The Chandler's Ford resident is cycling to local churches around Hampshire as part of the 70K in May challenge. The challenge, which echoes the everyday journeys of millions globally who walk large distances for basic necessities like clean water, allows participants to traverse the distance in any preferred manner. Mr. Ridsdale, a volunteer speaker and ex-trustee for the charity, said, "Every year during Christian Aid Week, people across Britain and Ireland raise funds, act and pray for their global neighbours in a celebration of hope for a fairer world. I'm taking up this challenge with a week of cycling from Chandler's Ford to churches around Hampshire. I'm planning to cycle the 70K to churches in places like Winchester, Southampton and Swanmore, which support Christian Aid. I hope to encourage them in their fundraising, and I hope they'll encourage me. Funds raised during the week, which this year runs from May the 12th to the 18th, support the charity's mission to empower susceptible communities to find sustainable solutions to pull themselves out of poverty. This year's appeal particularly focuses on Burundi, one of Africa's poorest and densely populated countries. The country, heavily dependent on agriculture, is ill prepared for climate change effects, including landslides, droughts and floods. If you're interested in taking part in Christian Aid Week, or if you wish to support Mr. Ridsdale's cycling challenge, please visit the Christian Aid website."
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And would you please put the memory stick and the address label back in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Well, thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to my readers, Heather.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Bye.
Deborah.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.